I have no right to force my way in and steal a fortune, who has never been meant to me. And yet, I cannot with indifference see how she suffers, how he neglects her, how they might just pull accident over each other. Should I just pull me back, so not to expose myself to a temptation, that I might not have the strength to resist, or should I continue my visits, do what I can to comfort and so fought the thoughts in my head and feelings in my chest. It was a chaos, which I could not find any solution to. It was past 12 when I finally stopped outside my door. At night I lay awake a long time and dreamed me into a happy land, where only me and another found the way. When I next morning opened his eyes, was the evening's little episode so busy for me, but a voice within me waked me, as it cried, "You fool! Are you immediately ready to put yourself into the leading position? Are you really imagining that she is harboring more than a sister's friendship for you, and do you want so bad, to pay such a beautiful confidence?" Ashamed that even for a moment had had the idea of an action that would have been both her and me unworthy, I dressed and went out. In the stair, I met the postman, who handed me a large letter. It was from my regimental commander and contained an order that I in December had to enter into service. This was located in my hometown. I would thus have to go home within a week, a complete reversal of my plans. I had thought that all winter to stay in Stockholm, where I filled the time with my writing and language lessons, and entertainment options, as the capital city had to offer. My father had grown old and lethargic, and now I encountered no difficulties to get what I needed from home for my living. But this letter stroked a line through all my plans. Was it fate that wanted to help me out of temptations I just had been brooding over? It almost looked so. But before I left, I wanted to once again see Gunhild. I had to say goodbye to her. It was the night before my departure. I rang and the Virgin Maid came and opened. "Is the wife at home?" "Yes, but I do not think she can receive the lieutenant, for she is nausea. Tell her I just wanted to say goodbye, because I leave Stockholm tomorrow." She disappeared but returned with a greeting that I could step into the atrium and wait a little, so would the wife just come. I waited a long time. She finally came out, wearing a pink robe with wide white lace around the neck and sleeves. Her hair was loose. She was very pale. It was somewhat transparent in her whole being, who gave her the touch of a spirit being more than a lady of flesh and blood. Never had I seen her so beautiful. "Forgive me, Gunhild, I understand now that I disturbed you more than I ought. But how is it with you? You're so pale." "It's probably no harm in me, but I have recently felt so tired, that I decided to add me. And so I come and..." "Yes, thank you for coming. I have longed for you, and when I heard that you should leave Stockholm, I have to meet you. But what is the reason for your trip? I hope it only be for a short time. Come and sit here, then we talk small." I explained the reason for my trip and expressed my regret at having to leave Stockholm and the good companion, as her and George's friendship bestowed upon me. "But the army service came above all. It will be very empty without you," she said slowly and with much emphasis on the words. "What will it not then be for me? But I shall always be in grateful remembrance preserve the friendship I got in this home, and especially with you, Gunhild. I have not had the good fortune to possess a sister, but you have been to me both sister and friend. You have taken care of me and brought me to be a more real human. Yes, I tell you, Gunhild, that had not..." Here I was interrupted of a child cry from the bedroom, and Gunhild disappeared. It took a while before she came back. Kurt sleeping so restlessly. I do not know what it is with him. I'm afraid that he gets his concern from me. "Do you have any particular reason for concern?" I asked. "Have you had a letter from George?" "Yes, the day when my anxiety was at its greatest, I finally received a long letter from him." "Well?" "Yes, all is well and good. He works and he enjoys the music. A whole week he has been in Berlin and heard a couple of big concerts. He also thanks for my last letter, but in the two preceding, I've written with a week between time, he says nothing. Either he never received them or they had fallen out of his mind when he wrote." "Don't he say anything about being homesick, and that he counts the weeks to Christmas? No, but he asks for Kurt, and so he asks if I want that he shall come back. He seems to have no desire for me. He has always me, but he awaits me to yearn for him. Oh, Berger, if you knew what it feels like to go here and freeze and starve and then be comforted with such crumbs. She had spoken warm, and it shone from her eyes a fire that I could not misunderstand. This genuine outburst of her feelings came as a liberating password. It threw a glaring light over my own vague emotion. It turned me back on track. Gunhild, I said, you should be thanked that you so trustfully opened your heart to me. It should you not have to regret. I understand both of you. George suffers from the usual male selfishness to think too much of himself and too little on what he should carry on his arms. He loves you, as he always did, there is no doubt, but he is so busy with all the new things, which storms into him out there from the big world, that he loses his own way. Artists like him, is gripped so strongly of momentary impulses, so that things located a little distant in time and space, fades without thereby in any measure, obliterated. You shall see how happy he is when he comes home, and to have you back in its immediate vicinity? It is always the impression that grips him. Believe me, he's here as completely as ever, and when he are home again, you forget all your worries. But she'd been beaten up, because he is such an egotist, and I have the urge to give him bashing. For God's sake, Berger, not a word to George or anyone else about what I have said. Maybe I will have to talk to him about it. Be calm, Gunhild, you can confidently trust me. But now I must go. I should be home and pack for the trip by the stagecoach early tomorrow morning. I feel almost as if I had been banished. Farewell. Think of me sometimes and then write down your thoughts. She put both her hands on my shoulders. Thanks, Berger, for your friendship, and thank you for what you said. I think it has done me good. I shall consider your words, when I am alone with myself. Farewell. Do not forget she, that counts you as her best friend. I took her head between my hands and kissed her on the forehead. When I came out on the street, I felt light and happy. I had won the clarity of myself and acquired a loyal friend for life. 14. A sunray and a cloud. When I came home, a notice met me that father was very ill, almost dying. It was a pneumonia, which had been quick, so I had not yet received a letter, which my mother the day before had been writing about it. Now I came almost too late. He was in a high fever and did not recognize me. At night it was final. This caused a reversal of my life. I was the only son. It was a good and profitable business. My father pushed, and there was no one who could keep it for mom's and my bill, if I did not take care of it. Admittedly, I was not brought up to be businessmen, but we had in the office two loyal and skilled assistants, and with their help it would probably go in the old ruts. Unless I took care of the business, it would cease, and it was too rewarding to be discarded. After much hesitation, I decided to take up my father's work. It was a great upheaval in my plans, but when my decision was made, I was calm. So instead of entering the service in the regiment, I wrote my resignation. The funeral was over and I had started to familiarize myself with my new duties. It was still and quiet at home, and I often sat late into the evenings in the office and worked together with my assistants, who lived their small rooms and now ate at our table. Everything was well, but life gave me no joy. I had written to Gunhild and informed her about the changes taking effect, and also received a friendly but a short answer, giving no nourish either to imagination or feelings. She mentioned that George was now expected home about a week, and it took her quite, so that she hardly had a thought for anything else. From him had I not had a single word, since his arrival in Dresden. The thought of the idyllic home my friends had and how good everything would be between them, when he came back, aroused in me the desire to obtain my own family home, for as I had now, I was admittedly free from financial worries, but lived a joy poor life. My mother was a practical and capable housewife and took care of the internal economy in an exemplary way, but when we at evenings met in the atrium, she with her socks knitting and I with a magazine or book, we had not much to say to each other. If I exclude one another old friend from school, I had very few friends in town and hardly any friends. On the regiment I had only done one meeting and was therefore very little known of my former colleagues. I lived a hermit's life with my office books and the occasional novel. But Mother got a bright idea. She wanted to take a younger girl in the house as a company and as a help in the household. I thought it could indeed be a break in the monotony, and so we put an ad in the town's newspaper. One after another of the city citizens' daughters came up and offered their services, but Mother was skeptical and could not decide. It looked as if we would not get any. 14 days went. We sat right at the breakfast table, then doorbell rang and the maiden came in and reported that another girl came and asked me if the place was still vacant. I cast a curious glance at the applicant when she walked through the hall into the atrium. She was small, had beautiful, deep eyes and looked, moreover, quite good. Then my mother went in to speak with her. I could not deter me from doing me a case in there also, to get the opportunity to look at her a little closer. I took her hand and saluted. She looked at me with her big dreamy eyes and was suddenly flushed red. It was as if she recognized me, but I knew me not to have seen her before. She collected her thoughts, and greeted freely and comfortably. While Mother Shiji made a good impression and it was agreed that she would get the spot. Her name was Martha, the daughter of a farmer, who owned a small farm a mile from the city. So it was that I once again met Gudrun. With her, it was as if a sunbeam had trickled into our home and now played over the darkened mahogany furnitures and played in glass chandeliers and sconces. It suddenly became so bright and warm in the chilly old-fashioned and rigid floor. A fairy godmother had with her one touch not only the furniture and household goods but also by Mother and me, and even the two offices lords. Miss Martha's laughter and friendly smiles had lifted us all in the major. Particularly, I could not fail to notice that she devoted myself a good deal of attention. She put great care into my room, so it'd be nice and neatly, that I always had clean linen in my drawers and a flowering potted plant in the window. I enjoyed working better at home now, came earlier from the office and often sat in the evenings and read aloud to the ladies. So went the winter and spring came. I made a business trip to Stockholm and visited, of course, my friends George and Gunhild. When I arrived, I was just Gunhild home. She met me very kindly, but I immediately noticed that the old intimacy was gone. She told me that George was working on a larger composition, but never was satisfied with what he did without constantly changing and never got anything done. This made him melancholy. Of one and another opinion, I realized, too, that it had entered financial difficulties, but I did not want to be indelicate and asked why not elaborated on how matters stood. While we chatted, Georg came home. He was in a very bad mood, and the welcome he gave me was so chilly that I absolutely pulled me back a little, wondering what the reason could be to such a narrow host. Gunhild was apparently a little embarrassed by the unpleasant mood and went to Kurt. There was a moment of awkward silence. "How are you, George?" I asked in a friendly tone as I could commit. He bit his lip without replying. "Tell me frankly as in days of old, what's weighing on you?" It shot a dark flash out of the eye, as he replied, "Tell me you, what is the point? Do you intend to continue your visits to this house as in the old days, when I was gone?" "But, George, what do you mean? I do not understand. Is it really your intention to insinuate that? Don't you think I know how you went here day in and day out uncomforted? And then you went away, just before I came home. The trick could you have saved me from? What is the disgraceful illusions you come with? My relationship with your wife is the purest friendship? Anyone who says otherwise, he's lying." In our heat, we had not observed that Gunhild had re-entered the room. She stood at the door quietly and just looked at us. Our quarrel was silent. Then we became aware of her. That I would have to experience something like that, she finally said with calm and serious voice. "Georg, it is unworthy of you, as you treat Berger, and me." There was something so impressive in her performance that George just fell out of his role. He just mumbled something about that in all cases, it was unpleasant to hear such things about us. "You should stand high above and not listen to such gossip. You are in the bottom too upright a character to make you guilty of such baseness. I could not love you as I do, If I did not know that it is only a rashness that will make you forget you so. You have a readily combustible mind, and this can sometimes overtake your self-control, but at heart, you are however my Georg. I am your Gunhild. Her voice had softened, and the last words came as a gentle spring rain after a thunderstorm. Let me see now, that you are as near to goodness as to anger? She gave him her hand, which he hesitantly took, and led him, as a man leading an ashamed child, up to me. Then she caught even my hand and said with a delightful small smile and a tear in one corner of her eye, let us three to be friends, we might need each other. I am convinced that George, as well as I, felt small before this woman who so dignified and restrained subdued the battle, which were close to upflaming between us. He handed me quietly his hand, which I pressed with heat, and so we parted reconciled again, but without it come to any trust between us. On the return trip, I had caught a chill on me, and immediately after returning home, occupy the bed. I was in a high fever. The doctor feared pneumonia, but would come back later in the evening. Mom went uneasily out, but Martha departed not from my side, as she sat down and patted my throbbing temples. The fever was increased, there was dancing so many weird fantasies in my brain. I thought. I went into the woods and looked for prey. Behold, my forest princess, I cried, come into my arms, I just want you in my arms. Look out for Eric, he's not to be trusted, he wears on your lids, but I will take it from him, though I shall kill him. Now I have you, you women robber. Fire, fire. It burns, the whole farm on fire. So I lay delirious. Give me some water. Martha handed me the glass. I saw that she had tears in her eyes. Do not be sad, I said, this will soon pass. She turned the pillow. Thank you, it was nice. I had a moment's natural sleep. The doctor came, he listened to my back. His fears were confirmed, it was pneumonia. It became a serious crisis. In 1 week I hovered between life and death, but life won in the fever released, eventually. One night, when I woke up, I saw Martha kneeling beside the bed with her head against the bed and her hands clasped over the quilt. I reached her with my hand and stroked her hair. She jumped up. Sorry. I must have fallen asleep. Was there anything you wanted? No, I just wanted to touch your hair, it was so soft and warm. She took my hand and kissed it. Martha, I said, you must give yourself rest. Now I'm so restored, no one needs to watch over me. I myself can take the water glass. Let me stay. I will not let sleep surprise me, if I only get to sit here. I took her hand and brought them to my lips. So we had found each other. We, who from the beginning, was one. 15. A coincidence and a dream. Our wedding was in the fall. I had invited George and Gunhild, but they could not come. Gunhild wrote very friendly and confided in me that she went in expecting Days and Georg were putting the finishing touches on a composition. It was a melancholy undertone in her letter. I tried to read between the lines the reason, but was not to fathom it. Was it disappointment to life's happiness, or was it financial troubles, or was it just a mood of anxiety, so natural in her predicament? We moved into a little residence, as I managed to rent the house next door. Mom had probably wanted us to stay in her house, but she had never been able to resign herself to completely leave command to another, and I did not think Martha would feel as alien in her own house. Now followed a few years of great and rich happiness. Martha was delightful in her loving devotion, she made our little home so bright and beautiful. Our only regret was that we did not possess any children. But Martha was not strong, and our doctor said it probably was the most moderate, that she did not have to go through a pregnancy. My business went well in the beginning. I had managed to negotiate contracts with some larger estates to take over their entire crop and made a good profit by selling it to an export firm in Stockholm. Maybe I had, after all, my blundering on different tracts, finally in my proper place. But the difficulties came, I got my competitors and agreements terminated, crop failure. Sales decreased and the times were bad. On one occasion, when I was in great embarrassment, I wrote to George in pure business style and asked if he would accept the 3-month bill at 5,000 crowns. I needed them to fulfill a contract agreement, but could not for earlier than 2 months, have payment from my business firm in Stockholm. He replied that he had very bad of himself, since his father, in consequence of bad iron prices, had been compelled to reduce his payout. He had therefore been forced to put aside his compositions not yielded anything and instead devote himself to music lessons, but, however, gave a meager bread. But, he added, it's not money you want, just my name. This is it. Wear it in good health. This was, if I accept some insignificant letter, the only contact I had with my friends since I got married. The due date came. I redeemed the bill and returned to Georg his name with thanks for the help. Marta's failing health caused me constant concern. She became increasingly thin and transparent, suffered from headaches and insomnia, must maintain a strict diet and beware of any effort. But she was always in equilibrium, cheerful and happy and spread formally sunshine in our home and our lives. To strengthen her powers, doctor had suggested a bath treatment on the west coast. And now we are a few days in Marstrand. I had followed Marta there and would stay a few weeks. Then I would go home, but come back and get her home. It was a sun-warmed morning in early July. We walked along the harbor. The steamboat came from Gothenburg with new bath guests. We stood at the gangway and watched the newcomers. The A, to my great surprise, saw George and Gunhild and their 2 children. Martha had never seen them. It thus became a new acquaintance for them and for her. We parted, but agreed to eat dinner together at an inn. Our wives soon became intimate with each other, but George was at first very closed. It felt as if he wanted to hide from me, and I did not want to be intrusive. Over coffee, Gunhild told that George's father was very ill, and that there was little hope of his recovery, but that it probably could not last for long. I expressed my regret. But it did not seem very touching Georg. He sat quietly for a moment, then he said, more like talking to himself, yes, if father goes away, so we move to the village/country. Perhaps it is easier to be a farmer than musician. Gunhild's face lit up with a fleeting smile. Yes, and then you come and visit us. Not true, Berger? It would make Martha good, to reside some time in the forest region. I think it would suit her better than the sea air. It is so sharp for one of those little fragile creatures. Thank you, replied Martha. I'm probably not as frail as I look. It would always be dear to come on a short visit, but long I do not want to be away from Bridger, and he is so bound by his business. We talked a long time about old memories, and I managed to finally get Georg really exhilarated. He told old student stories in a very humorous way and hummed little songs occasionally. As we parted, lighted Gunhild's beautiful face of a happiness that I have not seen since shortly after her wedding. The next day a telegram came, who called George to his father's deathbed. Gunhild wanted to follow, but he declined it. Then the trip with 2 kids would be too difficult to ride several miles up in the mining district. 1 Swedish mile equals 6 English miles. She and we were then daily along, and I saw to my delight that Martha and she more and more approached each other and soon became the best of friends. Gunhild told us now that Georg had been much altered when he came back from abroad. First she knew not why, suspected he had fallen in love with someone out there, but for an occasional remark. Her suspicions began to take a different direction, and they got their confirmation by the unpleasant scene I already depicted. After that, however, he had become more even-tempered and shown her much tenderness. But it always rested upon him a certain melancholy, which made life hard for both of them. Gunhild attended at his constant failure to achieve any composition that could win recognition. Once he had, in Lockroy's Salon - presented a violin concerto, on which he expended a lot of work, but the one who performed the violin part had not had the correct perception of the work, and it was taken by very chilly criticism. This cast down his courage, and then at the same time his father had been obliged to reduce the maintenance he left, Georg became despondent. It was then, Gunhild had induced him to start giving singing lessons, which yielded not so small. It soon came a telegram to George's father was dead, and a few days later a letter with a disappointing notice that the heritage they expected could not be great when the firm was much indebted. Georg's mother had died 5 years ago, and he was the only heir, but it could even be concerned about that he should make himself known there, as not to be drawn into a possible bankruptcy. Gunhild decided immediately to travel to the funeral and be part of the process, to make herself a concept of the situation for the estate of the deceased. During melancholy feelings we stood there on the dock, waving her away until the boat disappeared. When we later in the evening were sitting outside and enjoying the sunset, Martha leaned against me. "Do you know, Bridger, I have a strange feeling that it will happen an accident to our friends, and that we must help them as much as we can." "Yes, it does look right looming out if now would be that the nest is ruined. It is strange how fate can refashion our conditions. Who could believe anything else than that George would become a rich man, who completely can devote himself to his art? When he got as good as gifted wife, so was his happiness human seen, fully. And now he stands perhaps facing financial ruin, and what is worse, I do not think he fully appreciates his magnificent wife. I, anyway, think that she keeps more of him than he of her. But what's the notions you have about an accident?" "I had last night so strange a dream, which still stands as clear to me. I thought I was up on a high mountain where there was only ice and snow. I went there all alone, but then I saw an old man with a big white beard. He stood high on a cliff and waved at me. I climbed up as far as I could, but then I encountered a steep rock wall, which closed the road. Then he leaned down, took my hand and swung me up so easily as if I were a feather. He took me kindly in his arms, called me his daughter and brought me into his tent, where it was nice and warm, but so crowded on all the walls and tables of strange things, which I cannot describe. It was as if I had entered a wizard's residence. But he looked so good, and I felt right at home with him." "Did he say anything to you?" "Yes, I remember very clearly his words. 'You shall say, Bridger, that he must help Georg when things are going badly for him.' It was a strange dream." "Did he say any more?" "None that I can now remember, but those words have burned into my mind. Shortly after, I woke up. Martha had often important dreams. Many times we had noticed how they kicked in. I was therefore not so little depressed over this prediction. What would happen to my friends and what could I do to help them? 15. Crime and terror. It was the year after it happened. Since our wives were now familiar, they wrote quite often to each other and we had thus been part of the events. The estate bill showed certainly not a bad result, so that a bankruptcy was necessary, but the debts were great and it was required much skill and good housekeeping to keep up the stores and liquidate them so that each one had its own. George, however, had decided that he'd take the lead in his own hands, and for that reason they had now really moved to their property in the mining district. But how could he, the unpractical musician, in the business so giddy man, be able to go ashore with such a task? If he took Gunhild to his confidant in all of their business, so could it possibly succeed? For she was wise, she also had no particular experience, but it was hardly likely that he, reticent and withdrawn as he was, would share his troubles with her. One day, it was in the fall of 1869, a telegram arrived saying, "Come at once, Hotels Rydberg, Ray Gunhild." It was dated Stockholm. Thus, they were there as a traveler. "Now is the time for you to help," said Martha, when I took leave of her. "May you possess the power and ability to do so. Something tells me that this is great interests at stake." When I got off the train at Stockholm South Station, I saw Gunhild on the platform. She stood pale with wondering eyes. "Well, fortunately you came. This is not a minute to lose. Insert a picture of this time, Hotel. What has happened? You tremble like an aspen leaf. Thereupon we shall talk on the way. I have a rental horse trolley outside." And then she told me that they had come to Stockholm on Sunday evening. George had important business to transact, and had intended to travel alone, but she had been stubborn to go with, and so it was. On Monday Georg only said that he at any price must acquire 10,000 kr, or else they were lost. "But," he added, There is no danger. I will probably make it. And then he had gone out. All day long she had been sitting in a deadly anxiety inside the hotel room and waited for him. Hour after hour passed, but he was not heard of.